The best tee should be, should have creases like the leather boots of Tartar horsemen, curl like the dewlap of a mighty bullock, unfold like a mist rising out of a ravine, gleam like a lake touched by a zephyr, and be wet and soft like earth newly swept by rain.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Worst Foot Forward, where each week me, my cast and our guest search out the best of the worst. I don't know about you guys, but sometimes I bloody love a nice cuppa. And it's the worst thing in the world when you wake up, you discover you've got no tea bags in the flat, you go out, Sainsbury's is closed, the corner shop is inexplicably closed, and you are nowhere from a tea farm. So you go back into the house, you knit yourself a little tea bag using mostly earbuds and cotton thread, you go out into the back garden, you scramble up bits of leaves and soil and squirrel poo and bits of the birdhouse and put it in there and pop it in water, and it's still disgusting. That is what today's
what
podcast...
What the fuck did you expect? What's wrong with you?
Mate, I'm British, I needed a cuppa. And with me is the Darjeeling to my Rubosh, the PG to my tips, it is Barry McStay.
The Lapsang to your Souchong.
Yeah.
You're right.
Yes, mate, I'm very good. Oh, and as ever, if this is your first time listening, I'm Ben Vanderveld. I always forget to say it. You'd think as someone who professionally introduces other people, I'd be good at professionally
introducing
myself.
That's the problem, you're really good at introducing other people. It's yourself that you fall down on.
Yeah, I really do. I'm delighted to say that, like with every recording, we have a delicious cup of tea right here.
It's true, yeah, and we are. This is the second in our recordings from Brighton. Last week you'd have listened to us chatting to the excellent Professor Elemental, and we stayed down, we're being treated to cups of tea in the house of our delightful guest. Our guest this week, GQ has described her as one of the most delightful performers you're ever likely to see. As well as writing a novel and a television comedy series, she is a member of the Comedians Cinema Club improv troupe and founder of the Cinemastermind podcast. Her stand-up has been seen all over the UK and Europe. She supported the likes of Russell Kane and Jason Manford. She's won the Best MC at the 2017 Comics Comic Awards. Now, that's who you should get to introduce you, Ben. And reached the finals of the Amused Moose Comedy Award, Paramount Student Comedy Award, Chortle Student Comedy Award, and Funny Woman Award. She's much like Arsenal Football Club when it comes to finals, always guaranteed to be there or thereabouts. So now...
That's a dig. That's a massive dig.
No, that's so fair.
Well, here and hereabouts, it's the alliterative Laura Lex.
Hey, hello.
Hello. I'm sorry we don't have an award for you.
No, do you know what? I literally, the Comics Comic Award, the MC Award, I got presented with that at the end of last year, and it's a lovely award because it's totally peer voted. There's no industry people. But up until that, I'd forever be being introduced and by MCs and stuff, but it's the award winning, and I'd be sat there going, "Oh, I'm really not. Like, I've lost loads of awards."
Yeah. I'm an award nominated playwright, in that my play was nominated for 6 awards and didn't win any of them.
Oh, that's pretty good, though. You have to see that as an average of going. That's
I got really good at practicing my "Oh, I'm really pleased for you" face.
Yeah.
You've lived your entire life in that little box in the bottom left-hand corner. Yeah, that's where the runners-up always come.
Clapping and talking to the person beside me.
The trick to it is to just stop attending the awards evenings, because then it makes it look like you're too cool to be there rather than you just can't face more disappointment.
And what you need to do is get your husband or your best mate to record a catch-all video saying Laura couldn't be here this evening because she was busy entertaining 60 drunks in Peterborough.
Yeah. And then when you do win it and they're sent up to get it, you burst, they go, "Laura couldn't be here. I am here! I've been backstage the entire time."
I love the tone with which you talked about the Comics Awards as though it's a beautiful glittering award ceremony. I don't know about you, but I know previous winners have been given their award at a service station, which, as is tradition, because that's where comics sort of intersect with each other.
Comics and doggers.
It's the best thing I've ever been given at a service station.
I have to ask, what is the worst thing you've ever been given at a service station?
We're not allowed to talk about that because of the non-disclosure agreement.
Yeah.
Beautifully answered.
Well, speaking of worst things, what are you worst at in the world, Laura?
I think I am worst in the world at dancing.
Have you not seen Susan Kalman on Strictly?
No, I didn't. Oh, was she...
No, she was wonderful. Oh, we were talking about this earlier. I love Susan Kalman.
I love Susan Kalman.
Please come on our show, Susan Kalman. I love your work.
I've just finished her Susan Kalman is Convicted.
Yeah, it's a brilliant series.
Really, really good fun. Strictly Come Dancing, I think, is my worst nightmare.
Really?
Sort of glad that I'm probably never likely to reach a level of celebrity good enough, because I just can't think of anything more like stomach churningly. You know when people say to you all the time, like, how are you a stand-up? You must be terrified all the time. And I think, no, it's easy. It's just words. And then I look at dancers and just think, you psychopaths, why do you put yourself through that? That's really weird.
We're friends with quite a few dancers. In fact, we were playing games with one yesterday when she arrived, said, my body told me I had to do something with it today, so I ended up getting a massage. Just came in that my body was telling me I needed to do something. I couldn't decide what is a class, whether I should go to the gym. Then my body said it needed a massage.
I like exercise. I really do. But it's something about the coordination required with dance combined with the group expectation that you will be able to learn it at the same pace as a group of people.
Is there any particular style of dance?
I've cried during Zumba before.
That sounds like an autobiography in the room. Yeah.
I didn't have the level of sass that everyone else in the room seemed to have. And at one point they made us spank the floor and I just remember thinking, no, backing out of this room.
Why were you having to discipline floorboards?
I don't know. I had no idea. It seemed to be some sort of sexy dance workout. It was horrible. But anything with that level, like a kettlebells class or something, you know, where you swing the weights around. If there's any kind of coordination, I find it really difficult to do one thing with my left leg and then move an arm. I've just started with a personal trainer, guys. Crushing this year.
She's an award-winning
kind of money now. I sold the
trophy. Oh, I'm really sad that you don't use the trophy for reps. A kettlebell in one hand and a glass microphone in the other. Today we're going to talk about the world's worst tea.
It's a really British subject. British subject we've done, so we haven't done world's worst empire.
Belgium. We were the biggest, they were the worst.
Yeah, maybe.
I mean, this one's a really easy one. The world's worst tea is anyone who puts the milk in first. They're fucking heretics and should be burnt at the stake.
I did read there was a, so I can't remember which unit, it might be University of Hampshire or Buckinghamshire, did a taste test to see if anybody could tell the difference between them. And no. The number of people who were like, well, they said the number of people who guessed tea first correctly was about the sort of number you'd expect from just coincidence.
Well, that just, I'm questioning the qualifications of the people in the test then. How much tea do these people drink? Have you got actual tea lovers or just some people?
That's maybe the problem. There's too much coffee now. Coffee drinkers contaminating the market.
Well, tea, for the first time since it was introduced, the last 5 years, tea sales are dropping for the first time.
Yeah. Oh no, well, hopefully this podcast will really...
We're what the big tea needs.
Big tea. Capital T.
Mr. T.
Why has Mr. T not been part of an advertising campaign?
He did Snickers, didn't he? I bet Big T were really angry they missed out on him.
Yeah, absolutely.
Tetley's tea, that they use the Mr. T at the start of the word Tetley's. Or PGT Ips.
Okay, I think we're learning why they never used him now.
Yeah, we are.
This was the meeting.
Yeah, and obviously we brought Laura on here both as a comedian and as a tea sommelier, the impression I've got from what you're talking about.
Well, I love tea. I really love tea. And I thought I was fairly limited in the type of tea I like. I like just a builder's brew of tea.
Yeah.
And then this year I was given a voucher for Fortnum & Mason and had no idea what to do with it and spent like a whole year wandering around it going, I don't know what to buy. I've got no idea. And then just as it got near Christmas, they had a tea bag advent calendar.
So yes, it was, I saw this.
Yeah, 24 days of different teas. And I was like, there we go. That's what this voucher's been waiting for.
Yeah.
So then I started trying their fruit teas and infusions. And for the first time ever was like, oh, I get fruit tea. These actually taste nice.
Yeah.
Because I sort of think with fruit tea, it smells amazing and then tastes like water.
Yeah.
And these ones didn't. And then right in the midst of this advent calendar was the worst thing I've ever put in my mouth.
Hold on to that thought. Unless we're back at the service station. because your suggestion's not coming quite yet. Barry, you're going to kick us off.
Well, I see you have this website open, Laura, tea.co.uk.
Yeah.
It's an amazing website. The website of the UK Tea and Infusions Association. And they say that tea originated, well, the legend goes that tea originated.
The legend?
The legend of tea. Yeah, it's been around for, like, 2,000, 3,000, 4,000 years.
No, I knew that, but I didn't realise it had a mythical genesis.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, there's going to be a Hollywood film with Mr. T playing T.
Great.
The embodiment of T.
Oh, like in a like inner space type way where he gets shrunk down and he's in a tea bag.
Like in Inside Out, yeah. Where they play the emotions. He's just playing like T, the
yes.
essence of T.
Multi-rolling.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they say that Chinese Emperor Shen Nung, this is like... couple of thousand years BC. he was sitting outside in his garden, and beside him was a servant boiling water for drinking water, and the wind blew some leaves off the Camellia sinensis tree, which he was sitting underneath, into the boiling water, and someone tasted it and said, "Oh, that tastes nice." And thus tea was born, apparently. I didn't know that all tea comes from this one plant. Camellia sinensis. It's all from that. All the different varieties of tea. There's over 3,000 varieties of tea. They all come from that plant.
Well, surely all human beings come from one lady in Africa a couple of 100,000 years ago. So it makes sense with tea.
True. But I thought that, you know, green tea would be a different plant, like a related plant, but a different plant to... But they all still come from that one type of tree, which is really cool. Fun facts about tea. and I was reading about the different types of teas as well. There's basically like six brackets you put tea into. You got black, dark, green, oolong, white, and pu'er. Have you heard of pu'er tea? I know, yeah. Pu'er, missus.
Thank you for having exactly the appropriate kind of laugh for that joke.
Yeah, that's exactly right. But again, the website I read on about this, it said it's an aged black tea, the most mysterious of all the teas. Until 1995, it was illegal to import it to the United States.
Right.
But I think China, it's made in China, and it's sort of very, very protected how the whole brewing and manufacture process of it. And it's really rare. It comes in, the photos I've seen, it seems to come in like little, like compacted tablets of it, like some of the like really weird black teas do, rather than like loose leaves that sort of bunch together. And you can, some of these like old wine, you can go to tea auctions and you can bid on this stuff, and pu'er tea can go for like tens of thousands of pounds, like a little like block of it. So it's meant to be this amazing.
And can you, do people then hold on to it and just keep it as capital? And
ages, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, and you have your money invested. I'm sorry, all my money is tied up in tea.
Yeah, yeah. Well, tea auctions used to be a really big thing. They used to have them in the city all the time. The last one, I think, only took place like 20 years ago. Like, it's been really, it was one of those commodities that actually have open bidding wars on.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. It was really, really valuable. We recorded last week with Professor Elemental a week ago when we were down in Brighton the last time.
Correct.
And I found a video of him in sort of among researching. I found a video of him at a steampunk convention, mm-hmm. engaged in a tea duel.
Mm-hmm.
Have you heard of tea dueling?
No.
Oh my days, guys. So steampunk is a massive sort of community, and a group of steampunkers got together. It seems about 10 years ago. And created the Honourable Association of Tea Duelists and drew up the rules for tea dueling under the Hague Convention of December 1899. And basically, you get two people together and they sit opposite each other and they have to dunk a biscuit into the tea, hold it for 5 seconds, take it back out, and whoever's the last person to finish eating it is the winner. So you're encouraged to sort of leave it getting soggier and soggier and daring the other person to eat theirs before yours, because if it breaks before you eat it, you lose the duel.
I'm imagining that scene in Indiana Jones and Raiders of the Lost Ark, where they go up into the Tibetan mountains and Marion is there doing a drinking competition with the Siberian dude.
Yeah, they've got all this terminology for it. I've read these rules. They've got they call it a tiffin party, first of all, when you get together, and the judge is called a tiffin master, and the pot master is the guy who has to provide the drinks. The drinks are served in what they call the keg, not a cup, it's the keg, and must be no less than 3.25 inches deep, made of pottery or metal, though paper or card can be used in extremis. Tea is the only acceptable drink. You can use milk or sugar to taste. No less than 65 degrees in heat when you're using it. And the drink itself, once it's being dueled over, is called the Brew Marshal.
Now, Professor Elemental was a very charming chap, but these people are psychopaths. This is insane. Oh,
yeah, they even have nicknames for the acceptable type of biscuits you can use as well. Mm-hmm. You can use malted milks, a.k.a. cows, or Nice biscuits, a.k.a. Nickies. And they say, those honourable snacks, biscuits brown and biscuits fruit, are forbidden under the Queen's regulations. The duelists are called dunkers. They're allowed to bring a second with them in case their confidence leaves them. they have to hold the biscuit no less than half an inch from the edge, dunk it, as I say, for 5 seconds, then attempt to eat it. And the first person to eat 94% of it, as judged by our more, as judged by the judge, they've scored a nom, as they call it. You can get a bagging, which is a penalty for delaying a dunk. if the biscuit falls back into the drink, it's called a splash. If it falls on the floor, it's called a splatter. And if it falls on the dunker's person, it's called a splodge, and you are judged defeated with credit.
Oh. Yeah. Oh, so in the video you watched, did Professor Elemental win?
I think yes. The other person suffered a splatter before his fell off just after hers, yes, but he did manage to win the duel.
Now you described all of the rules, I do like a very British approach to competitive eating.
Yes,
you ever seen competitive eating videos? Mm. Like Japanese guys necking 15 hot dogs in a minute. This has got a little bit more class to it.
Yeah, it's very sedate. A little bit more rancorous maybe was the big court battle between PG Tips and Tetley. If you use a tea bag, what shape tea bag do you go for?
Square.
Square.
Well, rectangle, actually, technically.
Yeah.
I'm with Laura. Rectangle. Yeah. I'm happy to do a circle. Pyramids are not welcome in our household.
Well, now. The Advertising Standards Agency ruled a few years ago that PG Tips were right to claim that PG Tips uses pyramid bags. So if we test one against a regular tea bag, you will see the tea has got more room to move, freeing the great fresh taste for a perfect cuppa. That's the line that they had in one of their ads with Monkey and Johnny Vegas. And they did this test where they dumped the pyramid into a glass cup and a round tea bag into another cup beside it, and it showed over the course of 40 seconds to 2 minutes that the pyramid released more tea quicker. And Tetley saw that ad and said, "It's a round tea bag. They are dissing Tetley's."
Wow. And all the while, the tea duelists were watching that test going, "This is fucking incredible."
This is the most exciting thing ever, yeah. So they introduced the pyramid bag. The pyramid bag was invented by PG Tips' parent company in 1997. And Tetley said, because Tetley's are so associated with the circular bag, that this ad was deliberately trying to denigrate them. Basically, the Advertising Standards Agency looked into the research and said, no, actually, the claim is completely right. The tea has more room to move around in a pyramid bag than any other type of tea bag, because the way it's packed, it has like nearly 100% more room to circulate within the bag itself than a circular one does. And the bag has more room to circulate within the cup than a circular or a rectangle.
The people who don't get the credit is, of course, all the hard-working Jewish slaves who make every single pyramid tea bar.
All right, mate, keep your agenda to yourself. And the best thing of all about this whole thing is that Tetley's complained about it and brought this case about it. Tetley's have their own range of pyramid bags as well. So, you know, they could have just jumped on that bandwagon and said, well, here you go. But they missed their opportunity. One other thing before I get to my choice is tea money. Is a slang term for kickbacks in China. So if you're paying a bribe to a public official or anything, you say you're giving them tea money. And there's a group of artists in Yangjing in China who do these sort of calligraphic sort of Jackson Pollock style artworks. And a couple of years ago, one of them did an exhibition within their new headquarters, which is this amazing sprawling building. It looks like an iceberg. Of all the receipts for the bribes he had to pay to the officials to build the building he was then doing this exhibition in.
That's a high-risk manoeuvre in China.
Yes, yeah. I think, I don't know, he may be dead now, who knows. They were probably a bit busy with Ai Weiwei.
Yeah, probably.
But my choice for the world's worst tea is the tea stolen by Robert Fortune. Have you heard of Robert Fortune?
No.
Old Bobby Fortune. Is it connected to the Boston Tea Party?
No, which I have got some stuff on, but I think you might want to talk about it, Laura, so we might chat about it together.
No, that's absolutely fine. So Bobby Fortune,
So in 1848, Robert Fortune was sent to China to steal some tea.
Ooh.
Yeah, corporate espionage. You can guess, it was the British.
Yay!
Tea had sort of reached Europe in the 1600s. Catherine of Braganza was the wife of Charles II. She was a Portuguese princess, and Portuguese had taken some tea back to Europe, and she really liked tea. When she arrived in Britain, the first thing she asked for was a tea. And so she brought tea to Britain, basically, and made it fashionable in court. And that was the 1600s. By the 1800s, Europe still really knew really little about how tea was made, manufactured, grown any of the techniques. And Fortune was this botanist from Scotland, but he's working for the Horticultural Society in London. And the East India Company sent him to China to figure out how tea was made. And
that's an amazing expedition.
Yeah, it gets better. He disguised himself as a Chinese Mandarin in like the robes, probably fake mustache, and had a servant called Wang, of course he did, who walked ahead of him, 5 steps ahead of him, to make it look like he's a really sort of important master. And sort of announcing his arrival into towns and building up this mystique about, who's this? This Mandarin has arrived from the other side of the country. And Britain, at the time, they'd signed the Treaty of Nanjing in the wake of the Opium Wars, and Britain had these treaty ports they were allowed trade in and out of, but Britons basically weren't allowed more than a day's journey inland from those ports.
Right.
And so he was taking a real risk by going in further into the country. And he arrived in this factory, and this servant said, "My master is here to observe the tea-making process." And the factory boss went, "Yeah, right, it's just tea." And let him in, and he wandered around. And this place had a sign on the wall from the Cha Ching, which is an amazing Chinese book about the growing of tea, written by this guy called Lu Yu in the 8th century. So, like, a really ancient manuscript about tea. And has these amazing lines that the best tea should have creases like the leather boots of Tartar horsemen, curl like the dewlap of a mighty bullock, unfold like a mist rising out of a ravine, gleam like a lake touched by a zephyr, and be wet and soft like earth newly swept by rain. Makes it sound real. Like, I would drink, even if you weren't a tea drinker, you go, I would drink tea. That stuff.
Yeah, the PG Tips advertising committee go, "Now let's just get Vegas back."
Yeah. So actually, Fortune had been to China 5 years previously and didn't go on this mad sort of spying mission, but he was the one who learned that black and green tea came from the same plant. So even in the 1800s, the Europeans didn't know that they were all from this one plant. So in this 1848 thing, he managed to sort of get some cuttings. He had these like things which were like portable greenhouses, like a little case called a Wardian case, a little glass case that he was managed to stick the plants into and smuggle them out. And he managed to get he took about 20,000 plants, planted about 20,000 plants in Darjeeling in India, got them over the border into India, and illegally brought some Chinese workers with him to pass on the knowledge about how to prepare it all to the Indians that were going to be doing it. Most of those plants actually died, but the expertise was enough that the Indians were then able to replicate it and build up the industry. My favourite thing about this whole mission, though, is he saw some workers preparing these dangerous chemicals in the factory alongside the tea, and he thought, are they poisoning British people? Because they were preparing Prussian blue, which contains cyanide, is a dye that contains cyanide, and gypsum, which is like basically plaster. But what they were doing was they were making a green dye. They were mixing this sort of yellow and blue stuff together to make a green dye, because they believed that Europeans, when they wanted green tea, wanted it to look green.
Oh, wow.
So it wasn't like the tea that the Europeans were drinking would look disgusting to the Chinese tea drinkers of the 1840s, because they just poured all this like ridiculous colouring into it. But yeah, because of its imperial overtones, the sneaky underhand way in which he did it, and, you know, the dangerous chemicals that were in it to colour it, I would suggest the tea sold by Robert Fortune is the world's worst tea.
So, Laura, when we last left you, you were telling us about what was behind the door.
Well, actually, before I do that, do you mind?
Go for it.
On the subject of terrible empires and tea, I was reading about the origins of it in the UK as well. And, like, the Catherine of Braganza is such a fascinating story. And then I sort of ended up reading a little bit further in Charles II and the East India Trading Company. And there was just this wonderful paragraph that you went, every time I see a tweet where people go, "The world is increasingly disgusting and awful," and then you think, you've never read any history, have you? It's either stayed on a level or got slightly better in parts for some people. Because there was a wonderful bit about how when Charles married Catherine of Braganza, part of the reason he married her was that he was dead broke, just had nothing at all. So he married a really rich princess, and she had this crazy dowry. And then Charles II was very tied in with the East India Trading Company. Now, they had a monopoly over trade with the Indies, and Charles bestowed on them continuation of this monopoly. And also, and I'm quoting from the tea website here, tea.co.uk, not only did they have the monopoly, he also extended it to give the company unprecedented powers to occupy by military force places with which they wished to trade, brackets, so long as they were not Christians.
Whoa!
So basically just gave this, like, I mean, I didn't like what Theresa May did with G4S and the prison security But basically, Charles II is the precursor to this by going, hey, if you want to kill everybody there so you can trade, you go ahead and do it.
It's like we were saying, he's franchising out the empire.
Yeah,
by letting other people do the work for him.
This privatisation, really, I mean, like, increasing privatisation now is unpleasant, but it really has sort of swung in various directions for the whole of history.
Imagine Steve Jobs saying that to Apple employees. You can extend into, you know, China or into Africa, but feel free to, you know, use force if they won't accept iPhones.
It's fascinating. And then, like, it says further, another gift to Charles. So when he married Catherine, he had this incredible dowry. Now, when I got engaged to my husband, I didn't particularly like that he had to shell out for an engagement ring. So I bought him a PlayStation 4 as a reciprocal gift, because I thought
that's a hard thing to get on your ring on your finger.
he's very lopsided now from carrying it around
the red circle of death.
But when Charles married Catherine, part of his dowry was Mumbai. He just got given it, just as a, yeah, sure, you can marry my daughter. Also, would you like this city, this entire population?
I don't have anywhere to keep it. We're going to have to upsize.
Yeah. So he also allowed the East India Company to have monopoly over Mumbai as well, and they paid him a rent of £10 a year in gold.
A tenner a year to hang out in Mumbai.
Yeah, and Mumbai became the sort of biggest trading port that they had, and just central to the tea trade. So I found where all of that came from, and the whole history of tea smuggling in the UK.
Yeah,
just fascinating.
Did you read about that gang?
Yeah. So they basically, I can't remember what war we were fighting. One of many, we love them. and tea was so popular because of it being so fashionable. So they massively upped the tax on it to the point where it was just ludicrous. So smuggling became huge, and people were smuggling it in rowing boats and all sorts of things. And it wasn't until, I mean, they sort of played around with lower levies, but it wasn't until William Pitt the Younger came in and slashed all the tax on it. That was when the working classes could really afford to buy it. It was fascinating.
That's the root of the Boston Tea Party as well, and the whole taxes on tea.
I
read quite a bit about it. Do you know about Boston Tea Party?
I think so. I was just going to say, with like the tea smugglers, it's the 18th century equivalent of just nipping across the channel to get loads of dodgy fags. And
But they would there was one group had their smuggled tea seized, and 60 of them like basically attacked the prison in town where the tea was being held to get it back again.
Because all the locals were like, if you don't smuggle it, we can't have it because we can't afford to buy it at the taxed rate.
Yeah.
These smugglers were rampaging through town, and apparently, so the story goes, they didn't even bother to cover their faces, and as they're walking through town, they're just up and going, oh, hey Ben, hey Barry. Smash this customs house up, be back in a bit.
Yeah.
It's amazing, the commodities trade, because obviously, I love a nice cuppa, but I think most British people think that tea is grown in Shrewsbury. It's just, you know what I mean? It's so prevalent. But you go in, you're looking.
It's in the tea fields of Yorkshire, isn't it? Isn't that where Yorkshire tea comes
from? Sorry, yeah, of course. That's why it's God's country. Giants is munificence down on it, and tea everywhere.
I would move there in a heartbeat if it was. Well, Yorkshire tea is the best.
I mean, Barry's tea is the best.
I mean, Yorkshire Gold is the best. But
Barry's Gold Blend is the best. And that's another podcast. This is the one we're off brand.
Podcast is ending with a fight outside in the street.
It's ending with a tea duel. That's what it's ending with.
Oh my God, yes it is.
The Boston Tea Party. The reason the Boston Tea Party happened was the whole cry during the American Revolutionary period was no taxation without representation. They had no representatives in British Parliament, and the British government were levying all these taxes, particularly the high taxes, they say, on teas. And so in the 16th of December 1773... a group of patriots boarded these three ships sitting in Boston Harbour. The Beaver, the Dartmouth and Eleanor were boarded by this group of a couple hundred people. There was meant to be four ships actually carrying tea, but the William, which was what the fourth ship, managed to sink off the coast of Cape Cod on its way to Boston Harbour a couple of days before the whole thing happened. And there were these East India Tea Company ships bringing mostly back black tea from China. 340 chests were chucked overboard. at the cost of £9,659 then, $1.7 million worth nowadays.
Obviously, the most disgusting thing is that they actually poured loads of vats of milk into the harbour first before they chucked the tea.
The harbour stunk of tea afterwards.
Really?
Yeah, there was 46 tons of tea in the harbour in Boston. Oh. Of course, it would smell of tea. There was enough to make 18,523 cups, apparently. 18,523,000 cups of tea, and yeah, they had to close the harbour for a while. Firstly, because it smelled, but also because the authorities shut the harbour as a punishment to this city, but then to the Patriots for doing what they'd done. And Britain passed more acts to force the repayment for the loss of earnings, which just unified the Patriots even more against them, because you know they didn't say we should probably talk to these guys, but no, we're just going to make them pay for all the tea they've cost us.
So what we're saying is austerity doesn't work.
Back then, will we ever learn? 250 years later,
just something to mull on.
But it was this. You know, I have this image of like loads of people boarding the ships and rampaging through them. The only damage done was, apart from the tea, was one broken padlock, which belonged to a captain of one of the ships. And the next day, the Patriots showed up and had given him a new one. Because they didn't, they were trying to be really careful not to do any damage beyond what was needed. There was only one man arrested for it, a guy called Frank Akeley. And there was only one guy injured in the whole thing, was one of the Patriots called John Crane, who was knocked out in the sort of kerfuffle. And they thought he was dead, and they hid him in a pile of wood shavings in a nearby shop while they carried on with the raid.
Oh my God.
That's something you can't do in the 21st century. I just hid him in a pile of motherboards and microchips in the corner.
There's some fun facts about it. You can't visit Boston Harbor, or at least the location of it anymore, because the area where it took place is probably not underwater anymore. It's the corner of Congress and Purchase Streets in Boston. So if you actually want to go to Boston Harbor and look at, it's not where it actually took place. Until the 1820s, they didn't call it the Boston Tea Party. They just called it the Destruction of the Tea. It's not as catchy.
Yeah.
And there was another one. There was a second Boston Tea Party in March 1774, so a few months later, where 60 men threw 30 chests off of another boat as well. Not quite the same scale of it, but they were sort of keeping up the... They thought, this is the thing that's going to catch on now. We've got to keep the flame alive. But yeah, so that's where the Boston Tea Party comes from. I wouldn't imagine a cup of salty harbour water with tea in it would be would be tasty.
I don't know. Well, mate, wait till I get to my suggestions. That will sound tasty compared to some of the horrible stuff I got brewing.
Yeah. Imagine all the issues that the fish finally got to vent about though over a nice brew.
Oh my God! With like 18 million cups of tea in there, they probably
always swimming around wanting to bring things up, but not having the right medium to do it. And then suddenly they're like, "We should do it now. It feels like the right vibe. We can air some differences."
But also, it's a bit of a diuretic, so they were really. They were really pissy fish.
Sea level rose by 20 feet today.
This cod has a really odd, odd texture.
So, do you want the reveal of what officially is the world's worst? So, and I'm so sorry, Fortnum Amazing, because I had a really lovely time with your advent calendar on in general, but...
Well, that's that sponsorship out the window.
The worst cup of tea I've ever had in my entire life was a licorice, mint and lemon verbena tea bag.
That's three really strong flavours.
I know what two of those things are. What's lemon verbena?
Now, I had to look this up as well, and I'm going to look it up again just to double check I've remembered. It's basically lemon smell. And
you know that the Aldi tea bag is just like licorice, mint and lemon smell.
That was the first pass at it. And then, we probably need to rethink that name.
Lemon verbena is a kind of plant that I think smells and tastes a bit like lemon. It's often in tea and desserts, but it's a plant that smells a bit lemony rather than lemon something.
Like a lemony plant, like lemon thyme? Is it thyme you get?
Oh, it's gross. It was just rotten.
Did it smell bad before you made it?
It did smell quite licoricey, which, to be fair, is not my favourite flavour. But this was like... It was like having a Sambuca hangover and then brushing your teeth. But it was meant to be tea, and it was disgusting. And if you want to buy these tea bags, they are £8.50 for 15 tea bags. So not only are they the worst thing you've ever tasted, they're also just economically unviable. And in silky tea bags, so presumably not recyclable whatsoever, not biodegradable, terrible, just...
That's the most Fortnum and Mason thing ever, I think.
Yeah, utterly, utterly rancid.
And each of them woven by an individual silkworm who is being exploited.
Yeah.
They, I think they did a taste test on, like, a Channel 4 programme with like Michelle Roux and a couple of other famous chefs, and they did like a blind taste test of tea, and they tasted Yorkshire tea and PG tips and things, and really wankily and annoyingly they picked like an obscure, like it's £10 for 15 bags of a tea as their favourite tea, and they'll taste the best. The other ones tasted like dishwater and piss.
Wrong.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of them were delicious. The rhubarb and strawberry or whatever that was for the first time, actually had some fruit flavour in there, and I was ready to be bowled over right through till Christmas. But, like, I didn't want a chocolate advent calendar, but this tea bag sitting there in the middle was just the equivalent of having chocolate from days 1 to 15 and opening 16, and there's just, like, a early sprout in there.
Did you stick to it? Did you have one a day each day?
Yeah, I did, except I didn't drink the chai because I think that tastes... It's gross. And there was a second one of these which just got flung out a window. Just couldn't bring myself to put it near water.
But yours is your favourite. Do you presumably you don't do milk first though? You do.
No, I do loose leaf tea in a teapot and then strain it and milk after.
How long do you brew it for?
Quite a long time because I'm forgetful.
Yeah.
But also, living in Brighton, the water's really hard.
Yeah.
So you do have to brew it a little bit longer than you would in a soft water area.
Yeah, it's very important. I feel like lots of freelancers' houses, I just end up having half-made tea dotted around the house.
I mentioned earlier, I think, in that advert, the PG tips thing, 40 seconds and 2 minutes are the two favoured times for brewing for people. So there's a group of people who do it for barely any time and a group of people do it for a reasonable amount of time.
See, I really like my tea strong but also milky.
Yeah.
And some people find that confusing, but I like it to be brewed for a really good depth of time, and then I also like quite a lot of milk to just balance it.
Sugar?
No, of course not.
Maybe
I'm still one. I used to be 2 teaspoons. I'm down to 1, guys.
That's very good. Yeah. You are nearly a grown up. That's the thing, that over the years I've really tried to sort out all of my predisposed, whatever you'd call them, like suppositions about people, and you know, really thought, is this racist? Is this sexist? Is this disablest? But people that have sugar in tea, I just can't bring myself to stop judging them.
We say this in your room filled with Harry Potter novels.
Yeah.
With a Lord of the Rings sword on the wall.
Yeah, it's the only thing I would call you a mudblood over.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the sword that Laura goes out to kill people who have sugar in their tea.
Mudblood tea.
Mudblood tea. Okay, that is definitely a Slytherin delicacy.
Is there tea in Harry Potter? Because they got butter beer.
Yeah, they have tea leaves for looking at, because that's where he first sees the spoilers, the Grimm in the third one.
Is there tea in, I'm trying to think what fictional things there's tea features in heavily.
Surely any Jeeves and Worcester novel, I imagine.
Is Mrs. Potts in Beauty and the Beast?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I don't know that I'd want to drink from a talking teapot, though.
I don't know.
I don't know. I imagine tea straying through Angela Lansbury's mouth probably tastes quite nice.
But then you have to, like, you can't, like, complain about the broken cup because that's her child, isn't it?
Yeah, that's true.
Chip.
Yeah.
Got the chip missing.
Yeah, of course.
Which I want to know, by the way. So, they're all humans turned into things. Did he have a chip out of his skull before he was turned into a cup?
I reckon he had a tooth missing because he's a kid.
That's probably true. Because either way, if it's not that, and he's either like had a like an axe in his head, or since like he became a teapot, someone has broken him. Either way, it's horrific.
Well, is he in the final shot though, or is he just bleeding out somewhere else? Everybody's so focused on Belle and Prince Adam that they haven't noticed.
And there's a little bit of the beast left, and Prince Adam is like, "There's my blood somewhere."
I wish you'd left me as a cup. I would have survived. It was a survival technique.
Time for my suggestions. Laura talked about some of the most luxurious tea. I'm going to start talking about good, honest British tea during World War II.
Yeah.
So the rations that British and Canadian soldiers had, their tea was nicknamed Compo because it was from their composite ration packs. And these blocks had instant tea, powdered milk and sugar, and they were disgusting. Mm. According to a Royal Canadian Artillery gunner called George C. Blackburn, he said, listen, even when it becomes just cool enough to be sipped gingerly, it is still a good tasting cup of tea if you like your tea strong and sweet. But Let it cool enough to be quaffed and actually enjoyed, and your lips will be coated with a sticky scum that forms across the surface, which, if left undisturbed, will become a leathery membrane that can be wound around your finger and flipped away.
Leathery membrane. I don't think that was in the Ching Cha.
No, that absolutely not. Yeah.
Rationing's made me think of an elderly relative of mine who's getting a little bit forgetful. Her carer is trying to get her to drink her tea at the moment, and she's sort of like not wanting to drink. She wants really cold drinks at the moment, trying to avoid drinking hot drinks. And one of the carers is taking to reminding her that the tea is being rationed because it is the emergency or the war at the moment.
Oh, wow.
To try and and then she drank up her tea and ate her food.
Hey, you just got to find the levers, don't you? Yeah, exactly. People.
And by the way, for listeners who don't know, the emergency is what Ireland called the Second World War.
Yeah,
because we were neutral during it, yeah. So we kind of, because it was a British thing, we didn't really want to associate with it.
On behalf of all of my ancestors, thanks very much, lads.
Yeah, do you know that we sent commiserations to the German ambassador on the death of Hitler?
Interesting.
Yeah. Also, they were really trying to like stick to protocol.
Right, so I was calling it the emergency. Does that just mean all of Ireland were desperately on the phone dialing 999 to the police? There's a terrible emergency going on in Belgium and northern France.
Won't somebody keep the noise down next door?
Right, yes. Out of the war and into poo. I'm amazed we've not got to poo yet. Because obviously there's famously that coffee that is passed through, I think, a civet or something like that.
And there's elephant coffee as well, I think.
An elephant coffee is just the seeds
going through. Thing, yeah.
Yeah, well,
and
there
cat
poo.
Cat poo coffee.
Well, there's probably everything.
That's the worst type of poo, though, I think. Cat poo is so, like, mealy and gross.
Yeah, pull your act together, cats. Who better?
That was going to be our other option for what to talk about with you, actually.
Will's worst poo.
That's the time you're in that service station.
That I honestly reckon we could get a solid 45 minutes. I'm probably not solid.
A compacted 45.
Oh, I have opened up a Pandora's box and it's
full of Elvis.
Let's start with this.
How many types of poo tea are there, Ben?
Well, I'm sure there are an awful lot, but there's only two that I want to talk about. The first one is tea made from insect feces. Taiwanese farmers, they pick up the poo of bugs who only eat organic tea leaves, and they use magnifying glasses and tweezers to pick out the bits of tea leaf that have passed through the insects. The tea's not just meant to taste good, but it's also meant to have good effects on your health as well.
Are these bugs that really want to be bees? They really want to do honey.
Yeah. And they're just doing the best they can.
You do you, ant.
Yeah.
You shit out that honey.
Yes,
I
Laura.
I have a question. How did they discover this in the first place? Were they trying to make a collage of things found in bug poo and then discovered it was delicious?
I think you're going to find the answer in the next sentence, because I'm about to tell you where it's sold and who it's sold to. This bug poo tea is equal to its weight in gold.
Why?
And is sold in Harrods. So
the only people we hate more than Fordham and Mason's.
So rich people will eat... we'll drink Taiwanese insect poo tea.
I swear to God, if I said, listen, to suck my penis costs £1 million, I would have wealthy billionaires queuing out my door.
I mean, if you said that it had health restoring properties, then absolutely.
No, it's the penis of a tiny Taiwanese bug.
Don't be so hard on yourself.
Jesus Christ, just make something expensive and suddenly people want it.
Jesus Christ, 50 or so episodes in, you're pimping yourself out live on air.
Well, we haven't set up that Patreon yet.
Yeah, that is...
next on the list.
The other... That is a really weird giveaway for our list. It's like £1, you get a badge. £2, you get a tea bag that Laura's donating.
£1 million. Take a number and sit in the corridor outside my flat. Muhammad Al-Fayed's not done with me yet.
Oh, God.
I should have picked a sexy billionaire.
You should have picked... There are no sexy billionaires. Panda dung tea. Of course there is.
Because they can't have sex.
Yeah. So,
That's the problem with pandas not having sex. They still think they want to be bees too.
Yeah. Pandas realising how terrible they are. It's like, if we eat enough and we'll poop
we'll
honey.
Be bees.
So it's not actually tea made with the poop, sadly.
Oh.
But it's green tea grows using panda poo as fertiliser. It's grown in the Sichuan province, and it is sold at the price of $3,500 for 50 grams.
And 50 grams?
50 grams for $3,500. And you thought your Fortnum and Mason's was bad.
Is this in Harrods as well?
It is. As far as I know, it's not. It is sold mostly to crazy Chinese billionaires.
Right.
And to be fair to them, panda poo is a very good organic fertiliser, but the tea is...
Is literally shit.
Is literally shit. I have one more thing before my choice, and it is a tea called Chifia or Sifia, and it is tea that is brewed in Russia, specifically in Russian prisons. And
don't tell me the prisoners have to shit out tea.
No. Yeah, they feed them their parole hearing results and then they shit them out.
Laced with the heroin they've been smuggling up there as well.
A scene cut from Paddington 2. Brendan Gleeson and Paddington curling one out in the kitchen.
So Sifia, it literally means it's a Siberian word for a wine that has gone off and become sour and acidic. Nom 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 nom.
Sounds delish.
So you pop in 5 to 8 tablespoons of loose tea, and it's drunk by you pour it in a mug and then dilute it, and then you're meant to drink it whilst also eating like a really sugary sweet as well to dilute the bitterness.
So you make it are you making it in wine or are you making it in water?
No, you're making it in water.
You're making it in
but
water,
weirdly,
okay.
It's named after a disgusting
okay.
wine.
Fine.
You don't put milk in, but you can if you want to make it less bitter. This is where it gets horrible. It's meant to be drunk slowly, otherwise it may cause vomiting or diarrhoea.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. And my favourite thing about it is there was a film starring John Malkovich, who was playing a prisoner in a Russian prison, and he insisted on drinking Sifia during the whole shooting.
Ugh.
And got suitably ill throughout.
Ugh,
I never understand with things like this. Who was the first person to try that and not go, this has made me shit everywhere. Let's try and find a way that it doesn't do that because it's so worth it.
Drink it slower, mate.
Yeah,
drink it
slower and with this sweet thing to mask. Why don't you just not drink it, guys?
It's true. Like, you go, this doesn't taste nice. Why are we still eating
yeah.
it? Oh, wait, because it's massively expensive. That's why, and we're wankers.
Well, it's that. Well, it's also, it's probably came from the wilds of Russia where there's fuck all else to eat.
Is
it now really fashionable? Because it sounds like it was a prison drink, but now it's...
Yeah, no, that one is still a prison drink.
Okay,
thankfully.
Fine, good.
That one's not become fashionable.
Roman Abramovich doesn't serve it after dinner.
Only if Chelsea haven't played very well. In which case, Antonio Conte is just thunking out turds, and then they take that and they use it to make brew special Chelsea FC tea.
Grow pandas
and they
with it.
Yeah, grow pandas. Who then go on to play for Newcastle United. Yeah. It all comes round. But my choice is a very specific type of bubble tea. Have you ever had bubble tea?
I fucking hate
bubble tea.
Now, I don't...
I've never met anyone who does like bubble tea. Can I say that?
My wife.
What is wrong with your wife?
A number of things. I don't mind it. And if you don't know it, it's I think it started off in Taiwan. If not Taiwan, then maybe Vietnam or South Korea. But that sort of part of the world. And it's different fruity-flavoured teas with like little tapioca balls in them.
Yeah.
Which I really enjoy chowing down on. I really do. I have read one article that says that those tapioca balls may contain an awful lot of carcinogenics. So, like eating a couple of the balls is like smoking 10-pack of Marlboro Lights.
They look like frog spawn.
They do.
It's like you're just chomping down little...
Tasty frog spawn.
Little frog eggs. Little frog spunk.
Eggs is not the same as spunk.
I don't know. It's the tadpole inside it, basically.
Yeah.
The whole lot.
We don't...
That's like eggs.
What
chicken
like
eggs.
Eggs. Chicken eggs. Oh, yeah.
We're eating people's menstruation. So,
yeah.
You know, panda dung, probably not that bad,
really.
Actually.
Because the menstruation is different from the egg in a human.
Is it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't concern myself with that side of the gene pool.
That's right. No, but you're right. Of all the things that humans eat, eggs, if you mull on it too much, it is super icky.
Yeah.
Weirdly, I'm happier eating flesh than I am eating eggs.
It's what I tell the billionaires before they go down on me. Listen, guys, if you think this is weird...
Pick a subject as nice as tea.
I'm so
sorry.
This
is where we've got
I don't know what's wrong with me. I think it's because we're in Brighton. I've gone all like gay and liberal.
Yeah. No. That is, being gay and liberal is not having billionaires go down on you while you tell them about unfertilized eggs.
The most liberal thing ever is sharing myself out with everyone, no matter how rich or poor they are. Is
this as long as they've got £1 million. Yeah.
This is the view of what Republicans really think us libtard snowflakes get up to. But the worst tea, you can get obviously all kinds of different kinds of bubble tea, but in back in Beijing, they are selling dry ice bubble tea.
What?
Yeah. Because obviously for the show that they're putting on for the theatre, here you will immediately notice that the problem with this dry ice, it's basically frozen CO2 that's made to look like ice and is often used, you know, in theatrical productions.
Yeah.
It gets down to -78.5 degrees centigrade, and here's the thing, if you touch it, it can lead to frozen flesh or painful burns. And these drinks are served with an extra wide straw so they can be slipped very, very gently. But here's the thing, if you drink it wrong, kind of like the Russian prison tea, you're going to burn your insides as you drink it. But it's China, they don't, you know, have health and safety, they're not part of the EU, so there's no food directives. So far...
Fucking hell.
No one's died.
So far.
So far.
But, like, that's... Ugh. I mean, I don't know if that's... What you want to go is like a Pan-Asian restaurant where you can get a plate of fugu and then wash it down with some dry ice bubble tea.
Fugu,
see if you live.
Fugu's the...
Japanese...
Blowerfish.
Yeah, blowerfish. Yeah, yeah.
Do you know that mainly because of The Simpsons?
I think that's it. Yeah. Where we learn most of our...
Yeah.
Well, you and me, Noah, but obviously that's what the billionaires are vomiting up before they get down on Barry. So, our choices are Barry's suggestion of the tea stolen by Robert Fortune from China to India to set up the British tea industry as we know it.
Yeah.
Laura's suggestion of day 16 from the Fortnum & Mason advent calendar of licorice, mint and lemon verbena. Or my suggestion of the potentially lethal dry ice bubble tea. This is really tough.
I don't know about you though, but I think we both had such a visceral reaction to bubble tea.
Yeah.
And then the fact you've made it dangerous, like nearly deadly.
I'm leaning to bubble tea.
Yeah.
Oh, fair enough. That's nice and easy for me then. I suppose because Laura's, yours is a very personal taste.
Sure.
Whereas, and Barry's is naughty, but it's a great story.
It is a good story. You can see it being a film, but also, you know, a film from 30 years ago and no one knew better.
Yeah, well, exactly. That's precisely, yeah, Mickey Rooney is the star in it. But yeah, because mine...
It's more lightly.
Because mine is calumny upon calumny. It is going to be the Beijing dry ice bubble tea. It is the worst tea in the world.
Well done, buddy.
Before we head out into the world, it's time for the worst news of the week. The worst news comes from Tokyo. Japanese astronaut Norishige Kanai was on a mission on the International Space Station, but he's had to apologise for spreading the fake news that he grew 3.5 inches whilst in space.
Oh yeah, I saw this.
Yeah. Now, obviously, most astronauts do grow in space because the air between their joints extends, but it's normally no more than a couple of centimetres. But I'm afraid that Kanai went on Twitter and said, "I've got a big announcement, guys. My height's been measured. I've grown 9 centimetres. Clearly, he's paid far too much attention to his spam tray.
or he's been, you know, hanging out with the architects of Trump Tower.
Oh, I really wish that falls down because of bad measurements.
Yeah. But you know this? That he claims it's like 65 or 66 stories and it's like 58.
Oh, really?
He does it with all his buildings. Like, he'll go, oh, he's opened a hotel in Vancouver, it's 45 stories, you know, it's 32 or something. Like, he deliberately overestimates the heights of his... Not even overestimates, just says a
that
random
is so
number.
So on-the-nose Freudian.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, of course it is.
Of course it is, yeah. So anyway,
He's not in the queue outside my flat. Yeah. I have to draw a line somewhere, guys.
Specifically a no Trump's line.
Yeah.
So basically he... Kanai said this, and the Japanese authorities then 2 days later wheeled him out, and he had to make a statement going, the mismeasurement appears to have become a big deal, so I must apologise for the fake news.
Oh,
luckily, it appears I can fit on the Soyuz, so I'm relieved.
Oh, bless him.
Yeah, he's right.
I bet he was shamed so bad.
I'll bet, especially in Japan.
Oh, well, is he still up there?
I don't know. But I feel that in the month that John Young passed away, he was an American astronaut who was our world's worst astronaut for farting in space and talking about it over the comms, and he brought a packed lunch into space and some of the egg and cress got in the instruments.
We love him so much, he's featured in two of our episodes.
Yeah, he has, and it feels appropriate that that is our world's worst news. Before we go, Laura, where can our listeners find you and what can they find you doing there?
You can catch up with pretty much everything I do at lauralex.co.uk, and I'm also on Twitter at lauralex. I'm currently previewing a new show called Fight or Flight Club Festival, so you can seek that out.
Lovely stuff. We are all off to suck in dry ice bubble tea balls and fire them at our enemies. Until next time, bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Me and Barry have just sunk down some refreshing minus 78 degrees dry ice bubble tea, so we have seconds to live.
Washing down a plate of fugu. I like to live dangerously, Ben. Yeah. The world's going to end sometime soon, and we may as well.
That's actually on the KGB tasting menu.
Thank you very much, Laura. And do check her out, her website. If she's gigging in a club, you definitely go see her. If she's MCing in a club, you definitely go see her, because she's an award-winning MC.
Damn right. She's so funny. And also, do listen to her podcast, the Cinema Mastermind podcast. And also, like she said, she's part of Comedian Cinema Club, who Eric Lamper, a previous guest, he is the mastermind of that, and they are brilliant. So if they're gigging at a festival near you, do check them out. Now, we've got lots to get through at the end here.
Yeah, strap in. First of all, we've just had our most listened to week ever. So thank you all very much, listeners old and especially listeners new. If you've turned on to us because you like Professor Elemental or some other recent guest or a topic that we talked about, then thank you for getting on board. And if you're one of the people who seem to have gone back to the beginning, having listened to one of our recent episodes, stick with us. We are aware that some of the early sound quality in our episodes isn't great, but some of them are great. Check out the episode with Gemma Arrowsmith about the world's worst astronaut.
That's got a lovely story about Laika the dog and Laika's control dog and the other dog.
Laika's
as well.
Understudy and her understudy's understudy.
Yeah. Paul Flannery on board games is really lovely. Jim Smallman on professional wrestler, we always go on about, but it's so much fun. And already a very popular episode, Kiri Pritchard McLean, all about the world's worst serial killer.
Yeah.
So those are good little ones to pick out early doors. And some of the ones with dodgy sound quality are still good, but we were beginners at that then.
From about episode sort of 20 onwards, they're all consistently great in terms of quality and quantity.
Yes, and talking of quality, I've been getting involved in some quality social media engagement. If you follow our Twitter account, which you should, on at @worstfoot, I've been popping up bits and bobs of trivia from previous episodes, and guess what the most controversial one was, guys?
It wasn't the one about the Nazi board game you posted, Ben, was it?
Wasn't that, I'm afraid.
That astounds me.
People are fine with a game where you have to chuck the Jews out of Hitler's Germany as quickly as possible. What did rile people up was us suggesting that Daphne and Celeste were the worst musical duo ever, and I specifically referenced a Reading Festival appearance where they were put on before Slipknot, and angry Slipknot fans threw bottles full of piss at them.
Yeah.
Turns out some listeners and some followers were actually there, and that Daphne and Celeste took it like fucking troopers.
They did.
They came off stage, got hugs from Slipknot, who were total darlings, and then the Rasmus went out and were total pussies about it. Yeah.
Daphne and Celeste have definitely gone up in our estimation, but it did get UGLY on Twitter for a little while.
Yeah, it really did. And bless them, Daphne and Celeste liked some tweets that we put about it, so hopefully they're good sports and maybe future guests for World's Worst Metal Band.
Indeed. So if you were any of the people who stuck your oar into that particular debate, we want to say a special thank you to the people who've been with us from the very beginning, the likes of Dan Knight, Michael Ritchie, Richard Kirk, who are always tweeting fun stuff to us, and we really appreciate it. And we want to say a special hello to Janine in Canada, who sent us a lovely photo of her listening listening to the podcast on Christmas Day. So thank you guys. It means a whole lot to us. And if you're new to the podcast and you think, oh, how can I get involved in this fun online japery? Well, do, as Ben says, check us out on Twitter. Find us on Facebook, Worst Foot Forward. Send us an email to worstfootforwardpodcast@gmail.com. And the best thing you can do is go on iTunes or Stitcher or wherever you listen to us and just click the 5 stars rating on our show, or write a little like 1 sentence review saying this show is great, I listen to it on the commute. You won't believe how much that little sentence makes a difference to us, particularly if you're in a country other than the United Kingdom.
Yeah, it's all about outfoxing iTunes algorithm, as most of life is now. One other little thing for new listeners and old, you'll know I'm a stand-up comedian and I'm about to go on my first little tour this year. I'm going to be going to 7 different towns and cities over the next few months. I'm going to be going to Brighton, Leicester, Margate, Bristol, Norwich, Cambridge
and Hungerford.
Thanks,
that's
Barry.
My favourite one, because yeah, it sounds hungry.
It does sound delicious. Like, obviously they're a bit higgledy-piggledy, but I've looked at a lot of where you guys listen to, and quite a lot of them are that city or nearby. The first dates are at the Leicester Comedy Festival on February the 15th and 16th. I'm at Manhattan 34, which is a cracking bar. One show's at 7:45, another's at 8:30. So if you want to see me not doing anything to do with this podcast, but telling jokes for an hour, do come on down.
Wear a Daphne Celeste t-shirt for bonus points.
Yes, please do. Don't throw bottles of piss at me for extra bonus points.
If you can heckle him saying, ooh, stick you as well, that would be ace.
That would be astonishing.
Worst Foot Forward is part of Podnose, the UK's leading independent entertainment podcasting network. For episode archives of Worst Foot Forward and all of the shows on the network, visit us at www.podnose.com. You can also follow us on Twitter via @podnose or send us an email via admin@podnose.com.